Hello, and welcome to A Writer's Journey, the podcast that will talk about everything the aspiring author wants to know about going from blank page to published. Except in this episode, our 11th episode, it's a wild card week, which means we're going off of our regular topics just for one fun episode, and this one is going to be about what else? Scary stories, our favorite scary stories. And this was Terrence's idea, and I was reluctant at first because I'm not a huge fan of particularly scary stories, but I actually was surprised as I started thinking about it at how many scary stories I do, in fact, love. So, Terrence, why don't you get us started on this?
Okay, Sarah, you know I'm really excited about talking you into doing this topic this time of year, but any time, you know, I love to talk about this. So this is going to be scary stories, and I think that my idea of the scariest stories are stories that are based on true events.
Okay.
Now, this is assuming, of course, that you believe these events happened, mm-hmm. that you believe in these things, but some of the scariest things I can think of is like Amityville Horror.
Okay.
Which I actually saw the movie before I read the book. And so that's you know, truly. Do you know Amityville Horror? Do you know this?
I know vaguely. A family moved into a house, and it was so terribly haunted or something like that.
A demonic possession, really, is what happened. And it took over the man.
Okay.
And so that's what happened there. But also another story, true story, The Exorcist.
Oh, that one terrified me. Oh, Terrence, this is so funny. I can't remember if I've told you this before, but when I was a young girl, my parents rented a beach cottage. This was before we were living at the beach, but we were on vacation. I'll never forget this. And, you know, this was in the early 80s, and we didn't have – I don't think we had cable where we lived, but on vacation, the place had cable, and that night they were going to be showing The Exorcist on TV, and it just looked so scary. And so us kids, we asked if we could please watch it, and my mom and my stepdad just were both under no circumstances are you to watch this movie. So what did we do at night once they went to bed? We snuck downstairs.
Watched the story.
And we watched the movie, and I was absolutely terrified for, I cannot tell you, you know, how many weeks about being possessed by the devil. And of course, then my mom explained, we're Christians. So she explained to me, well, as a Christian, you don't have to worry about being possessed by demons. But anyway, that is a scary, scary story. I definitely believe in demonic possession. Absolutely.
Well, you know, that I think what makes it so scary is this is based on a true story, an event that happened, a child that was demonically possessed in the 1940s. And this movie, the book came out in 1971. And then, of course, from the book, they made a movie. And it got 10 Academy Awards. And I didn't know this until I was actually doing a little research for this episode, but they had crowds rioting all across America on opening day of this movie because the theaters were sold out and they couldn't get in to see it.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and so, I mean, big deal, big deal. And so these are the kinds of things. The Conjuring is a recent one that a lot of people probably know more about the movie than the book, but that's based on an investigation that was done by Ed and Lorraine Warren. And they are
demonologists.
Demonologists, thank you. I just got tongue-tied.
That's all right.
Yeah, and so, and they've written several books, and the latest one I just finished reading, the demonologist, say it for me.
Demonologist.
I just finished reading that, and I tell you, don't read that at bedtime. Because that is just some scary stuff there. But
you had some posts on your website about that, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I did a book review for that, and so that's, if anybody gets a chance, they can look at that. But that I just think that the true stories, of course, you know, we've talked about this before. A lot of times, truth is stranger than fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly sometimes it can be scarier because if this really happened, this is not just in someone's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, no worries, I have some fictional. Actually, Sarah, I have to tell you, I kind of cheated.
Okay.
On this. I have two lists of things. One is a list of a fictional adult or popular books, and then the other is like my favorite scary stories that happen to also be suitable for kids and young adults as well as adults.
Okay.
So I did kind of two lists there. So I'm hoping you're going to let me work
those
in.
That's fine. Oh, absolutely.
Okay, the first one I have is Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that one at all?
I've heard of it, but, you know, I never read that story. I never read that one.
It starts off, you know, there's two boys and they're childhood friends, and I think they're like 12 or 13 or something, you know, and the carnival comes to town, and Halloween is coming up the next week, and everyone's all excited. I mean, you know, they're in this little place called Greentown, Illinois, and this is a big event. The carnival's coming. Only, there's a twist there, Cougar and Dark's Pandemonium Shadow Show is not your normal carnival. And so these two boys have to set out to discover the secret of this behind this carnival and how to survive and how to save their town. And so this is a scary – Ray Bradbury is just a great writer of this kind of genre, I think. So that's definitely one I think is very good for this topic here. And another one, The Doll.
Don't know anything about that one.
Hmm. Oh, this is a creepy one. The Island of the Dolls is this eerie tourist destination in Mexico.
I've heard about that. And it's near Xochimilco, I think, is where it is.
And tell people what's there.
Well, it's an island. It seems, if I remember hearing correctly the story, that it was an island that was set up in the memory of a little girl or something. But there are dolls, like doll heads and baby dolls and little, I mean, strange, all kinds of dolls you can imagine. And they're mounted on trees, they're hanging from trees, plants, bridges. I mean, they're all over the place there, and it's a creepy, creepy thing.
It's a creepy, creepy thing, and people can go online and see. I'm sure there's probably YouTube or Travel Channel, all kinds of stuff of this. I've seen
pictures.
Yeah, it is. It's just the creepiest thing you've ever seen. Well, this story is based on this Island of the Dolls. On a trip to the island, this woman's daughter falls in love with this beautiful but sinister doll. And soon after that, she starts developing all these strange mannerisms that concern her mother. And, of course, research into the doll's past reveals this, you know, dark history and a curse. So that is just a scary story, Sarah.
That sounds scary.
And then the last one I would say for this list is The Shining by Stephen King. And do you know I've been to the Stanley Hotel?
Have you?
Yes, I have been to the Stanley Hotel, and it is one creepy place. It just because in broad daylight, it's just creepy. It's just because of its location and the dark wood and all these little dark corridors and it's just a creepy little place. I think just a perfect backdrop here. But anyway, he wrote this story about the Torrance family who embarks on a retreat. And at one point, I know the Stanley Hotel used to close in the winter because it was inaccessible. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I don't think it closes in the winter, just not a lot of business, but there is some skiing and stuff. But anyway, at this time when he signs on to be the winter custodian, they called it the Overlook Hotel. And everything closed down, so it was just he and his wife and child. And so, of course, there's all this backstory that they work into it and all of that. But his son, Danny, has the shine, which is a gift that allows him to see and know things.
Oh.
Yeah. And so as the days pass, this hotel, the Overlook, exerts more and more influence over the father and basically, you know, just turns him into something evil. And the boy can see because he's got this gift, but he's not old enough to really understand what's happening or what to do about it. And I remember seeing this movie at the ending of it. That's the most scary, and you talk about edge of your seat. Do you remember that?
I remember that movie, but I don't totally remember how it ends. It was a creepy as all get out. I saw it when I was, another movie like that I saw when I was young, so.
Well, maybe that's your problem. You saw these movies too young, and then they sort of scared you. You scarred you for life, maybe. That's it here. But I haven't seen a lot of things when I was looking this up here. I saw one of the reviewers wrote that Stephen King wrote most of the book while he was staying at the Stanley Hotel. And that's another one of those myths that circulate. So while we're on this, Sarah, I want to say on air there, he did not write the book at the Stanley Hotel.
Okay.
He got the inspiration to write the book after his stay, but he didn't write one word of it there. He had, and I put this in my book, Ghost Hunter's Guide to the Most Haunted Hotels and Inns in America.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the stories in there about the Stanley Hotel. He had a weird experience. He and his wife, they had a ghostly encounter while they stayed there. But and so you can read about that in my book if you like. But I also found out when I was looking this up, did you know Stephen King has written 50 books?
That's a lot of books.
That is a lot. I only have to write 27 more to catch up to him, though.
Oh.
So, yeah. But that's my first list, and then I have another list. So I don't know if you want to jump in and share some of yours.
Well, I'll jump in. Well, I'll jump in first with this and say that, you know, one of the, this is an interesting topic to discuss. Because first of all, I'm not a fan of the horror genre. When I say the horror genre, I'm speaking of the modern horror genre. And one of the big reasons why I'm not a fan of it is because I think there is evil in the world. I am one of those people who do believe that there's such a thing as good and there's such a thing as evil. And so naturally I'm not interested in sort of concentrating on the evil and thinking about the evil and giving it a lot of attention. But there's a lot of scary things happening in the world all the time. But one thing that I think is really, you know, it's really interesting to think about when you consider some of these scariest stories ever are they do deal with things that are demonic. They deal with things that have to do with curses. I think that when I think about this, I think about the Bible. And in the Bible, God tells his followers to avoid necromancy, which, of course, is trying to communicate with the dead, to avoid sorcerers. Because they're trying to deal with spiritual things of this world that they really have no ability to wield and they have no understanding of and leave it alone. And third, to avoid divination. And divination would be things like Ouija boards and other things where you're seeking answers from spirits that you really don't know. You know, you don't know what they are, and I can guarantee you they don't have your best interests in mind. So I think it's really interesting that so many of the scariest stories go back to these very primal things. I think we understand, you know, instinctively that there is evil in the world, regardless of what philosophical, you know, ideology someone has as to whether or not there really is such a thing as good and evil. And these days there's a lot of philosophical debates about that. But
what's your pick of your book, though?
My book.
Tell me one of your books.
Okay, my books, I was going to riff off of what I'm saying to say that the books that I love that would be sort of scary, horrific stories would be classic horror genre. And the reason why I like those is because they were scary stories, but they contained within message or a moral of some sort. In other words, they were instructive. They weren't terrifying just for the sake of being terrifying. They actually did have, you know, they raised philosophical questions and they did have a message. One of the first ones that comes to mind is The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells. This is not to be confused with Ralph Ellison's book. It's a completely different thing. But The Invisible Man deals with a mysterious man by the name of Griffin who had been a scientist and he had come up with a potion to make himself completely invisible. But unfortunately, the side effects of this potion that he created also messed with his emotions, with his psychology, and ended up making him very, very, very violent. And the story, you know, the story progresses to where he is terrorizing this town. He's, you know, killing people, and it's pure mayhem. He wants to take over the world. And in the end, he does end up, I'll give a spoiler. I mean, gosh, the book is, you know, well over 100 years old. But in the end, Griffin does get killed. But as he's dying, he becomes visible again. And one thing that a lot of people might not know is that the story of the Invisible Man can sort of be looked at as a modern version of the Ring of Gyges, which is a Plato by parable. Parable by Plato. And in the Ring of Gyges, which was in one of Plato's Republic books. It talks about, and see if this sounds familiar, Terrence, it talks about a ring that grants its owner the power to become invisible at will. And through the story of the ring, it sort of asks the age-old philosophical question that if you could be invisible, if you could do things without being seen, what, you know, what would you be guided by some morality? Would you do things that you might not would otherwise do, considering that people can see you? So, I mean, does that ring sound familiar to you at all?
Hmm. No, not really.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, some people have posited that the idea of that ring, the ring of Gyges from Plato's Republic, is actually hearkening, it actually could have possibly inspired J.R.R. Tolkien when it comes to the one ring that rules them all from the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit series. And so, but the point is, the Invisible Man, you know, is a terrifying story, but it does ask that philosophical question about what would you do or what would happen if you could be invisible, if you could go about, you know, unseen, what would you, you know, would you do things differently? Would you do things that you might not would do? Like, would you go kill people if you couldn't be seen and you couldn't be caught? Would you go be a peeping Tom? Would you, you know, what sort of things would you do? So that's one of the books. Another one is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And of course, you know, that the message behind that one is you have Dr. Frankenstein, who for his own reasons basically tries to play God, and he tries to create life. He tries to animate a dead body, which is gruesome. And you know, he not only that, it talks about the whole philosophical idea of you know, the people's reaction in response to the grotesque, and sometimes in responsible science, you know. So that's another horror story that we can think about that does have a moral. It does have philosophical questions that it poses. And then I'll jump quickly to the third one. The third one would be Bram Stoker's Dracula. And of course,
my favorite.
Yes. So Dracula is one, you know, that's one of the first horror stories that I actually studied. And it was because, I think we might have talked about this before, but my freshman year in college, in one of my first English class, I was an English major, but one of my first English classes that I had to take it in college was, it was like English 101, I don't remember, but it was a basic class that everybody had to take that was a freshman. And my professor was from Germany, and she was a very free-spirited, she was admitted herself to be a pagan, and she was a very interesting person, but she spent the entire semester on the subject of vampires.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so we did an entire semester of vampire literature and film. And so we studied Bram Stoker's Dracula, you know, along with various films and other iterations of the tale. But the whole point of Dracula originally is that Dracula was to represent a satanic figure. It is to be a pure evil figure, and it is attempting to corrupt others, to spread, you know, to spread its disease, stealing the blood, the life from others, and draining that. And of course, you know, ultimately we know that Dracula gets defeated at the end of the story and everything, but so these are, you know, these would be my favorite novels, my favorite scary novels of all time. And but then again, like I say, they, you know, for me, I like them because they teach. They have a moral. They're not just terrifying for the sake of being terrifying. They are scary, but I think they're scary because they, you know, deal with sort of these primal things. And then, of course, you know, I'm not adding these into my novel list, but some of my favorite scary writers would be the Brothers Grimm. You know, there's some of their stories, that all of their stories we hear as children, you know, sort of sanitized versions of their stories. But if you actually were to pick up the Brothers Grimm books and read their original stories, they were far more, many of them were far more gruesome, but they were also very instructive. I love stories by the Brothers Grimm, and then Edgar Allan Poe is another one.
You know, I just finished reading. I downloaded it to my Kindle there when I bought it there, and it took up, I forget how much space there was when it did it, because it's his entire collection of stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really read many of the poems because I'm not really big into poetry, but I'd read a lot of his stories, and mm-hmm. you know, I remembered some of my favorites going back and rereading some of these, and that was like the oval portrait, mm-hmm. the oblong box, The Pit and the Pendulum, The Fall of the House of Usher. God, there were some good ones.
Did you ever read The Cask of Amontillado?
No.
That is one that I remember reading in school, and that story freaked me out. Because at the end of the story, a guy gets buried alive. And what is, I mean, what, that's terrifying.
That is. Well, let me tell you here, I've got some scary stories that I think are suitable for all ages.
Okay.
They were written with kids in mind. But, you know, a lot of the things I see now that are kids' books, I think are pretty sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, kids, you know, they're more sophisticated perhaps now than they were before the internet and everything else now. But this is actually a series of books written by John Bellairs. The House with the Clock in Its Walls, The Figure in the Shadows, and The Letter, the Witch, and the Ring. And you can get them separate or all in one volume here. But the series opens with there's this little boy, and he's newly orphaned. He's 10 years old. He goes to live with his Uncle Jonathan. And he learns that his Uncle Jonathan and his next-door neighbor, Mrs. Zimmerman, are witches.
Huh.
Then he discovers that he himself has magical powers, and then he's soon thrust into a supernatural battle between good and evil, as you were talking about here. That's a classic concept.
Uh-huh.
And the series goes on from there, and, of course, he gets a little older and, you know, more things happen and all. But that's a really, I think, just a great series of books to read here. And then another one, Mirror of Danger by Pamela Sykes. And this is where this little girl, I think her name's Lucy, she goes up playing in the attic and she finds this mirror. And this girl's face appears in the mirror. And when she sees the girl, the rest of her, and she's wearing this long dress, like a pinafore and all, and she's got this strange look on her face. And then all of a sudden the attic disappears and another room takes its place. And because this is a room that belonged in the past, the girl in the mirror was Alice, and she'd lived there 100 years ago. And so Lucy found that she could visit her anytime she looked in the mirror. But then, of course, this will turn sinister, and things will go downhill. And so that's an interesting book here. But my absolute favorite, and one I recommend for all ages, is The Halloween Tree by Ray Bradbury. Now, do you know that one? If you don't know that one there, it's a classic adventure. There's four youths, and they're trying to save the spirit of their friend Pip from the ghosts of Halloween past. And along the way, these four encounter a mysterious and creepy character, Moundstrout, and he takes them on this magical journey that sweeps them back like 4,000 years. They go all over the world to places like Egypt, England, France, and Mexico and all. And the purpose is along the way they discover magic and the meaning of Halloween and their friendship and all. So, but it's fun, different kind of story, and one I would highly recommend there. So that's my collection there. So I did just want to ask you before we close today, just for fun, do you have a favorite scary movie, Sarah?
Well, I think that one of the favorite ones that my son and I like to watch together is The Invisible Man. We do like to watch The Invisible Man.
So which version? Is that the original one?
It's the old version with Claude Rains. It's like from 1930 or somewhere in there. We love to watch The Invisible Man, and so we – but this Halloween we've decided we're probably just gonna stay in and watch classic monster movies. But then it's Reformation Day too, so I'll be watching the movie Luther, which is a wonderful movie on the same day. So
now you're going trick or treating, right?
No, this year he says we're just gonna stay in. We're not gonna go trick or treating.
So he's not gonna be a werewolf.
He's been a werewolf. He already went to a party, so
he's
satisfied with that. He's like, how about if we just stay in this year?
He's different from me. There was never enough candy, never enough Halloween for me when I was growing up.
Well, this year, you know, last year, there's an area where first of all, we live on an island where it's very busy during tourist season, but this time of the year, there are not a whole lot of full-time residents, and the ones that are full-time residents are sort of spread all over the place. But then when we go over onto the mainland, there's a community where we sometimes like to trick or treat, but last year, it's been increasingly getting this way, but there's just so many people who want to create like sort of the horror houses with, you know, chainsaw and blood all over the place and stuff like that, and neither of us really like that kind of thing, and so I think that he's just kind of grown tired of that, and I certainly don't like it. So anyway.
Well, I don't normally like horror movies, but I'm going to tell you what my favorite scary movie is.
Okay.
It's Halloween H2O. And this was supposed to be the last Halloween movie And so it was going to be a showdown between Lori Myers and her brother Michael Myers. And in the movie, you know, it was played by Jamie Lee Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
And she had faked her death so that he would leave her alone. And so this is, and so they haven't seen each other in years and years and years. And then there's this scene when they come face to face and she's looking through this little like window peephole thing in the front door and he's on the outside looking in. And they see each other for the first time in like 30 years or something. And it's just absolutely the most terrifying. I mean, you just, that's just one scary movie. So that would be my scary movie there. But so that's what I have to share with you today. Do you have anything else you wanted to?
Well, no, I have to say, I really was stunned by how many scary movies that I actually do, that I do like, and that, you know, that it really did surprise me because I certainly don't think of myself as a fan of the scary, you know, or dark films or dark stories and things like that. But I was kind of surprised at how much great literature, you know, great classic literature, does sort of, it is scary. It does have its scary components, but, that's that good old story of good versus evil, and we always want good to win, don't we? So.
Yeah. Well, I thank you so much, Sarah, for agreeing to do this.
Well, you are the ghost story writer. If anyone who's listening to this podcast who has not visited Terrence's website, first of all, shame on you. But secondly, you should know that she has written just, I don't even know how many books. She's written, you know, she's written 2 dozen books, but a huge number of them are ghost stories. What she has done is she has painstakingly gone around and collected, you know, traditional ghost stories that are passed around in little local areas and things like that. And she's written these down. She's documented these places that are said to have hauntings. She's really a sort of historian in a way because she's documenting folklore of areas and whether or not you believe in, you know, these types of hauntings or ghosts and the way that, you know, ghost hunters and things like that talk about it. She's gone around and she's documented these strange happenings in these places. Like in North Carolina, you know, you have, I think the Devil's Tramping Ground comes to mind. Isn't there one Drumgool? That one always stood out to me.
Oh, the Drumgool Castle of the Secret Society.
Mm-hmm. And so yeah. Some of those that we, you know, that any of us here, anywhere you live, you're going to hear these stories growing up of the places that are, you know, haunted. And Terrence has documented these. And it's, you know, like I say, it's really sort of like recording customs and folklore of the area. So definitely you'll want to check out, if you're interested in that sort of thing, her website and the books that she's written about that. So
yeah, I think I just wanted to clarify here. I've actually done two kinds of ghost stories there. One is where I am chronicling folklore.
Okay.
Because I do think it's an important part of our past. And for the Carolinas, there's so much great folklore here, and storytelling is just a part
mm-hmm.
of us in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important thing. But then there's another series I've done, which is sort of a travel.
Okay.
If you're interested in going around to these places that have been investigated and are reportedly haunted. I have documented those stories, but those aren't necessarily the folklore stories, like the latest book, A Ghost Hunter's Guide to the Most Haunted Hotels and Inns in America, are just about places where you can go and spend the night and possibly sleep with a ghost.
Which I have no desire to do. Terrence knows that I have no desire to go chase ghosts, talk to ghosts. So,
yeah.
No, not me. No, thank you. But I know that there are definitely people out there who are into it. So, anyway, but, well, this was a fun episode, and I hope our listeners enjoyed it. And the next episode will be episode 12. I won't say what the topic is right now. You'll just have to stay tuned to hear it. So thanks for joining us.